Hello and welcome to the Monday, March 31st edition of Juno Afternoon on KTOO News. Today we'll talk with Andy Engstrom about his upcoming First Friday at the campus. We'll get a preview of Wednesday's Mudrooms. We'll hear about April's Fowls Day Chicken Summit and talk to some UAS artists about another First Friday show and talk with representatives of Great Alaskan Schools. All that and more. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A new study shows not all Canadian provinces have moved on a recommendation to include the history of Indian residential schools in their curriculum. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, there are questions about what students are being taught.
The first to take up the challenge was the Education Minister of the Northwest Territories. He says this is our story throughout the territory and throughout Canada. 2 years ago, the head of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, Justice Marie Sinclair, reminded education ministers that it's time to change the way they teach the history of the residential school era, and he wants the curriculum rewritten and have it made mandatory learning for every student.
The very same message that was being taught in residential schools was the very same message that was being given in the public schools of this country, and that we told them to change the way they teach children about Aboriginal people.
Sinclair also wants the text of Canada's formal apology in 2008 to be displayed in every school. Many teachers across the country also believe it's an important lesson and have already been teaching it in their classrooms. One teacher from Saskatchewan says there was a shocking lack of knowledge about the residential schools part of our history. Another teacher from Alberta began an after-school program for students interested in the work of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Meanwhile, Justice Sinclair will ask education ministers this summer for an assessment on how well they've responded. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Four judges in Rapid City, South Dakota say a federal judge went too far in requiring them to sign orders to produce transcripts. Their response, filed over the weekend, is part of an ongoing lawsuit claiming violations of the Indian Child Welfare Act and the 14th Amendment in Pennington County. Victoria Wicks reports.
The Sichangu and Oglala tribes and three Native parents claim that Pennington County's 48-hour emergency hearings in abuse and neglect cases are so brief that parents can't produce evidence to make a case for getting their children back. The children are placed in foster care until another hearing can be held, often 60 days later. And although ICWA requires placement in a Native home, if one is available, the children are most often placed with non-Native families. The plaintiffs are not seeking money. They want a change in Pennington County's process. Federal Judge Jeffrey Viken has said the lawsuit may proceed. He signed an order drawn up by plaintiffs requiring six judges in the Seventh Circuit to have certain ICWA hearings transcribed and turned over to plaintiffs' attorneys. Presiding Judge Jeff Davis has agreed to turn over his transcripts. Former Judge Mary Thorstenson says she has no objection if Davis finds it appropriate to release her transcripts. The other four judges, Thomas Trimble, Wally Eklund, Craig Fifley, and Robert Mandel, have refused to sign orders releasing their transcripts. They say that if they're compelled to sign the paperwork, they're compelled to sign off on predetermined judicial findings and legal conclusions. And they say a federal judge cannot commandeer state court judges, not only requiring them to contemplate an order, but also mandating the outcome. They say the order ignores the division of authority between federal and state governments and violates state sovereignty. The four judges concede that the federal court may have the authority to require state court reporters to produce the transcripts. Plaintiffs now have a week to respond. For National Native News, I'm Victoria Wicks in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Last week, the U.S. House passed a one-year reauthorization of the Special Diabetes Program for Indians. Tribal leaders and Native organizations are pushing for its approval. The Senate version was introduced March 11th and contains a five-year reauthorization. The program was established in the 1990s to address diabetes among Native people who have high rates of the disease. The program is set to expire in September unless it's renewed. On this day in 1882, Havasupai Reservation boundaries were modified. The Arizona tribe lost much of its land when the government confined it to some 500 acres of the Grand Canyon. Land was later reallocated by Congress. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Okay, and welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's Monday, March 31st, the last day of March. It is a beautiful day in Alaska's capital city. Last day of March has a lot of meanings. Maybe it really is spring. Maybe we will have a sunny folk fest. And if you have not filed for your PFD, today is the time. You only have till midnight tonight. So by all means, do that. And while you're there, you could check out Pick, Click, Give, and there is a double your dividend opportunity. Everyone who donates some money to any of the many nonprofits that keep Alaska going, they are eligible for double their dividend sweepstake. So that's kind of fun. You can check that all out at My Alaska. Okay, weather is sunny. Highs around 44. Tonight, increasing clouds. Lows around 30. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy. Highs around 40. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy. Slight chance of rain and snow. Lows around 32. And Wednesday is mostly cloudy. Okay, our first guest here at Juno Afternoon is Andy Engstrom. His work is going to be featured at the Canvas this first Friday on Friday.
Yeah.
And welcome, Andy. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's been a beautiful day out, walking the beach in Auk Rec and enjoying the sun, but nice to be with you this afternoon.
Well, thank you for coming in. That must have been hard to get back in the car and come to town.
Oh, no, it was okay. A little goes a long way here.
There you go. It's true. It's true. So, Andy, you have a show of teapots at the Canvas. Is that correct?
That's correct. This winter I spent the last 3 months just working pot after pot and letting the forms kind of create themselves. And we've got about 20 to 24 that are going to be out on display this Friday, starting at 4:30 to 7 o'clock. Hopefully we'll have some refreshments, some kind of a traditional English tea time with tea and cucumber sandwiches. That's what I'm thinking. We'll see how that goes.
That sounds great. So why teapots and how long have you been doing this? Because before you even answer those questions, I want to say that Andy brought an example of his teapots and some photocopies of his teapots, and they are terrific. I'm looking at something that looks like Aladdin lamp, which he calls Three Wishes, which makes perfect sense. They are delicate and interesting and incredibly unique. So I'm surprised that you're saying that you've only done it for 3 months intensely. Did you have any background before this?
In the 80s, I took a class one semester in UAA up in Anchorage, and then at Colorado State University, I took another semester, and that was late 80s, and then I didn't do anything until 2 years ago when I took a class from Louise at the Canvas. I didn't even know that there was a ceramic studio back behind the front gallery, which I don't know if most people know, that there's a little treasure downtown that they can take classes and get involved with a hobby. Getting your hands dirty with the mud is just so much fun. So when Brandon Howard, the current pottery studio manager, he offered a teapot class, I had to take it. So that was over the holidays this year. And the first time that I'd actually ever just bought studio time and just kind of went off on my own, I felt comfortable enough with my skills at this point just to kind of go ahead and go on my own and see what I could do. Along the way, Chris Taylor, the artistic director at the Canvas, had seen my progress and said, hey, we've got an opening for April. The whole year is booked, but April has just become open for the gallery expo. Why don't you apply for that and see if you can get a teapot show going? And I did. They granted me the show, and here we are, just a few days away.
That's amazing. And how many teapots did you make this winter?
Well, a few of them crashed and burned, unfortunately, and that's the world of ceramics for you. things are going to break and things are going to, clay is going to crack. But I, so far I've made about 28, I guess.
That's astonishing.
And I think about 23 or 24 are going to make the show, so I've only lost a few.
Right, and as I said, I have an example here that is really stunning, and then the photocopies of the what he's got to show are just really unique. So I see that some are porcelain and some are stoneware. What's the difference?
Porcelain is much finer, and it has a translucent quality about it. So the fun thing about porcelain is you can put a translucent glaze, like a blue celadon, that's liquid-looking. It's translucent, so the light will actually come through the pot if it's thin enough, and you can see the white stone or the porcelain underneath the glaze. And where stoneware is much thicker and more hardy, sturdy, and you normally would choose a glaze that was much more of a matte or a thicker glaze, you're not worried about translucence. Any sort of light, you're looking at a very solid color when you're looking at them.
Do you prefer one over the other?
Well, as kind of an intermediate going into the series, I was still working with stoneware, which is much easier to work with. And Brandon Howard, the ceramic studio instructor. Yeah, instructor. He encouraged me along the way to go for porcelain because he thought, you know what, you're really going to be happy with the results of the glazes on the porcelain. And at first, I was working with porcelain, and I went back to stoneware because it was so much more difficult to throw. The stoneware wants to sit there and let you center the piece on the wheel, whereas porcelain wants to push away from you. It's very malleable. It wants to push away from you and make a wobble instead. So getting the control of porcelain was a real big challenge, but about 60% of the pots in the show are going to be porcelain.
Wow. It's really, really beautiful. It just is, once again, so unique. So I have a question. Was it really fulfilling? Was the process really fulfilling? Were you surprised?
I was really surprised because a lot of the pots, I had some ideas of what I wanted to do beforehand, but probably 8 out of 10 were just, let's put a piece of clay in my hands on the wheel and let the shape just kind of create its own form. And the fun thing that I like about teapots is you get to combine the body, the spout, the handle, and the lid, and those four things have to make sense and have to have some sort of balance between those four elements. Whereas making just a bowl or maybe a cup, where you've got two components, this allows me to create a much more diversified landscape of shapes and as you can probably see, and if you want to come down to the show, I think you'll like what you're going to see. They're very architectural, and a lot of them have very feminine, masculine qualities to them. A lot of them have, you can see the human form in a very poetic or dance-like phrase within the form of the teapot itself. Others look like one's called Kremlin Tea. And that was designed off the top of the Kremlin, which I was motivated to do when I saw the Olympics and I freeze-framed and did a snapshot of some of the tops of the buildings at the Kremlin. They were just so gorgeous. And some of them have to do with India and the Taj Mahal. And those are kind of basic architectural concepts which I was building these pots from.
Yeah, and as he's describing them, I hope that you're hearing what I'm hearing is that this is not, you know, just your normal teapot that, you know, oh, it's got a round spout, it's got a round handle, and it's just kind of what you figure when, what you conjure up when you think of a teapot. These are really unique. All of the handles are incredibly dance-like, which is what you were just talking about, and it's just, they're really unique. I would suggest when you're doing First Friday, come down to the canvas from 4:30 to 7 to see Andy Engstrom's work. Andy, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much, John.
sun. Wine for the woman who made the rain come. Eagles, sing your hearts away. As wild sinner thin, the children play. Oh Lord, how they play and play. For that happy day, for that happy day.
Hello, welcome back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis, your Monday host. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. Our next guests are Clint Farr and Carmen Farr. Clint is a board member of Mudrooms, and Carmen
Hello.
Is his daughter.
Want to say hi?
Hi.
Hi. And they are here to talk about the upcoming Mudroom event this Wednesday, I believe.
It is. It's Wednesday, April 2nd. And that was like the first thing I wanted to talk about was, I think the posters said Tuesday, April 2nd, but there is no such thing. It's Wednesday, April 2nd.
It was an April Fool's joke.
That was. Well, you know, the theme this week is deception. So,
good job.
Yeah, exactly. We're starting it right out. Right. Well, yes, it's at 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 2nd at the Northern Lights United Church, which is the church over in the flats, 400 West 11th Street, I believe.
Okay, so. And can you just give us a brief rundown of what Mudrooms is? It's a
okay.
storytelling event?
Yes, it's Juno's preeminent storytelling event.
I would
concur. And, right. And it's $7 suggested donation for 7 minutes speakers, 7 speakers. And the idea is your friends and neighbors, they get up on a stage and they tell stories. And we listen and get to know a little something about our neighbors. And all the money that's raised goes to some sort of nonprofit. It's Big Brothers Big Sisters right at the moment.
Great.
And it's been quite successful. We've raised upwards of $20,000 this year.
Oh, my goodness.
For nonprofits.
It's still March.
Isn't that crazy?
That's crazy.
It's
and also,
crazy.
You, like, blew out of McTheater's Hall, right?
Boom.
Like,
yeah,
and that
yeah.
wasn't even McTheater's Hall. It was the church.
It was the, down in downtown.
Right.
And so we had to go to bigger digs. And here we are at Northern Lights. And we love Northern Lights Church. It's just such a great location. And we're filling that place up. So hopefully we can continue to stay there, though, because it's such a great – I love the atmosphere there. It's very personable.
It's fantastic. So deception is the theme. It's
yes.
Wednesday at 7 o'clock.
Yes.
And who are your deceptor storytellers?
The stories of deception this week. This month, I should say. Catherine Hatch, Alex Kotzlars, Stuart Siddons, I believe, Corina Torgesons, Katie Giorgio, Amy Dressel, and Nick Beausoleil.
And the musician of the month?
Yeah, the music this month is by the Wool Pullers. Isn't that
cool.
great? Is that good, Karen?
Yes.
Wool, yes. Yeah,
good.
Like the Wool Pullers.
Good. All right, and what is, just in case, you're probably full for May, but what, as far as storytellers?
You. We are full for May, and I'm honestly not sure what the, it's some Alaska-themed thing,
okay.
but I'm not sure. We're going to have our board meeting here in another week or so, and then we'll have and at that board meeting we're going to talk about next year's themes, and then we'll post those and get them out through all the social, you know, media outlets that there are, and start having people get signed up for next year.
Okay, great. And if people want to find out more, is it
mudrooms.org?
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you, both of you, for coming in today.
You're
Carmen,
very
you want
welcome.
To say goodbye to Juno?
Goodbye, Juno.
Oh, but that's just Carmen. Stay tuned. We have our next guest. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 31st of March, 2014. It was on this day, 1930, the Motion Picture Production Code was put into effect. It was known as the Hays Code, after the Hollywood censor Will Hays. Guidelines for the depiction of sex, violence, crime, and religion in American movies. A list of 36 don'ts and be carefuls. It was made obligatory in 1934. And from then until 1968, films had to pass the production code in order to be released. The Supreme Court had ruled in 1915 that the First Amendment right to free speech did not extend to movies, so the film industry was nervous about government regulation, and they adopted the Hays Code, which said that crime must be punished, criminals should not be presented as sympathetic characters, pre- or extramarital sex must never be portrayed in a positive light. Authority figures must be portrayed with respect. The church and the clergy must not be laughable or villainous, and showing drug use and interracial romance were outlawed. The Hays Code was the reason Ingrid Bergman got on the plane in Casablanca instead of living in sin with Humphrey Bogart. But in the 50s, a number of movies defied the Hays Code, such as Billy Wilder's Some Like It Hot, and the production code gradually faded away. It was on this day, 1951, the Remington Rand Corporation signed a contract to deliver the first UNIVAC computer to the U.S. Census Bureau. UNIVAC stood for Universal Automatic Computer. It was the first American commercial computer. After the Census Bureau, the Air Force bought one, the Army Map Service, the Atomic Energy Commission, and the Navy, and then General Electric, and then Metropolitan Life Insurance Company. And it's the birthday of the Ukrainian-born Russian humorist and novelist Nikolai Gogol, born in the Cossack village of Soroshinsky in 1809. Wrote stories of his childhood memories of Ukraine in a book called Evenings on a Farm near Dikonki. Came out in 1831. It was a big sensation. In 1836, he wrote a play, The Inspector General. Gogol was disappointed, felt the play was misunderstood, spent most of the next 6 years in Europe, where he produced his most famous work, Dead Souls, in 1842. Here's a poem for today by Jeffrey Harrison, To a Snake. I knew you were not poisonous when I saw you in the side garden. Even your name, Milk Snake, sounds harmless, and yet your pattern of copper splotches outlined in black frightened me, and the way you were curled in loops, and it offended me that you were so close to the house and clearly living underneath it, if not inside, in the cellar, where I have found your torn, shed skins. You must have been frightened, too, when I caught you in the webbing of the lacrosse stick and flung you into the woods, where you landed dangling from a vine-covered branch, shamelessly twisted. Now I am the one who is ashamed, unable to untangle my feelings, braided into my DNA or buried deep in the part of my brain that is most like yours. To a Snake, by Jeffrey Harrison, from his collection Into Daylight, published by Tupelo Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that's been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well. Do good work and keep in touch.
In fundraising for Big Brothers Big Sisters Bowl for Kids' Sake. Get your team together, collect your donations, then come celebrate at our big bowling party Saturday, April 5th. All your efforts will help match and support kids with Big Brothers and Big Sisters right here in Juneau. You'll have the chance to win some great prizes, including Alaska Airline tickets, helicopter adventures, gym memberships, and much more. Sign up online at www.bbbsak.org/bowl or call Big Brothers Big Sisters at 586-3350.
Okay, it's 3:24 p.m. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. We were just listening, just chatting with Clint Farr about Mudrooms, which is Wednesday at 7 p.m., a storytelling event. Another writer's event is 360's Writer's Showcase. It was live in March, and now it's going to air tonight at 7 p.m. on KTOO News for Focus on Community. Five writers submitted pieces, more than five writers submitted pieces, five
pieces were chosen out of many submissions, and they will be read by actors. Sherry Simpson is one of the writers, and the actors are Brandon Demery, Christina Apathy, and Roblin Gray Davis, along with others. So that's 7 p.m. tonight on KTOO News Juno. So Friday, First Friday, is coming up, and here in the studio with me is Jacob Higgins. He's here to talk about the UAS Juried Student Exhibition that's going to take place at the Jack this Friday. Hey, Jacob, how you doing?
Hey, good, thanks.
So tell me about this juried student exhibition. How does it work?
Well, they select a juror each year that has some expertise in some field of the arts, painting, ceramics, photography. I believe the juror this year is specializes in sculpture. So the students pick a selection of their work that they've been working on over the semester, and they get it ready, and they submit it to the show. So not everybody is required to do this, but most students do find something that they want to present that they feel particularly shows their strengths or something that they've been, you know, particularly proud of and have overcome some challenges and want to present it. So
great. And then this person chooses what will be an exhibition.
Yeah, that's right.
And when do the artists find out?
The artists, well, they submit their work Wednesday.
Okay.
So they submit it to be reviewed on Wednesday. And my experience has been, for the last couple juried art shows for UAS, is that you actually find out the day of. When I've submitted pieces in the past, it was going to the gallery to find out if it was in there, which, you know, it gets it down to the wire, and it's kind of interesting for students.
Okay. What's your medium?
I'm specializing in painting and drawing.
Okay. And is there a certain type of drawing and painting that really calls to you? Or you?
Well, I try to dabble in everything, and as a student, I'm trying to step out of my comfort zone. So I've really been focusing on life drawing and different methods of painting. So some classical methods of painting that have been around since the Renaissance, and also some more modern art approaches. But a lot of what I've been focusing on is life drawing and drawing from still life and focusing on things like perspective, because I've always liked to do sort of fantastical things, and those things, you can sell them better if your technical expertise is there.
Hmm, interesting. And has your work been in other?
I've been featured in the last two.
Oh, great.
So, you know, I don't know. This year, once again, I'm submitting stuff that's completely new, that's not like nothing I've done before. And I think it really reflects what I'm doing as a student. So I'm submitting a landscape. I'm submitting a figure study that I did with oil, which is definitely stepping out of my comfort zone. A study of a modern artist, Edward Hopper.
Wow, that sounds great. How many artists are usually featured in a student exhibition? Is there a magic number? Or?
Well, I think they do have a number of pieces that can be shown, but I don't know that there's actually a number of artists that they're making a quota for. So, for instance, I know that some people submit 10 pieces. I tend to do, like, you know, no more than three. I've had a couple that have been shown. And then there's other people that have sent in one and it didn't make it. You don't really know. It's really at the pleasure of the juror.
Right. And in the past, what kind of art is usually contained in any exhibition? Is it all one genre or is it all different types?
No. That's another really good thing about these shows is it does showcase, and I think most of the jurors try to showcase all the different departments. So, you know, I'm most familiar with drawing and painting, but you also have ceramics, you have sculpture, you have form line, you have photography. It really runs the full gamut of what UAS has to offer.
That sounds great. So that's this Friday from 4:30 to 7 at the Jack, First Friday, the UAS Juried Student Exhibition. Is that correct?
That's right.
Great. Thanks so much for coming in today, Jacob.
Yeah,
we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. Thank you. It is 3:33 p.m. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO News Juno. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. And our next guests are Darren Snyder and Sarah Lewis from the UAF Cooperative Extension, and they are here to talk about the Juno Chicken Summit. I have to read this because it's too good to be true. Come talk turkey about chickens during a weekend of lectures, panels, workshops, and tours. Then join us for the Juno's third Tour de Coop, traveling tour of local chicken yards and chicken coops. It's chicken crazy mania this weekend.
It sure is.
It sounds great. So this is the third annual Chicken Summit.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
okay.
Indeed.
Hey, well, tell us all about it.
Well, we've had it for, this is the third year, and we've expanded it this year to be two full days on Saturday and Sunday, this coming up Saturday and Sunday, so it's going to be the 5th and the 6th. The first half of Saturday is, as we mentioned in the flyer, that's where we're all gathering together at the Egan Lecture Hall at UAS, and we're going to be having lectures and discussions, expert panels, all of your friends who've been raising chickens for years, and all of you who are interested in doing so, is a good chance to come together, share the lessons learned, what's been working, what hasn't, and figure out ways to help more people raise chickens for either eggs or if they want to eat them, to raise chickens in Juno. So it's what we're promoting, and it's a great opportunity. And we've got two new workshops coming up this time around, and we can share about those. One of them is Wendy Smith, who's a longtime 4-H volunteer, is going to once again demonstrate when it's time to for your bird to come to its end, whether intentionally to eat it or just because you need to. She'll share some of the proper techniques for doing that and for all the processing of plucking it and cleaning it and everything else. And in fact, this year, Wendy has raised 25 birds, and people can actually register to purchase their own bird and process it themselves. And so they kind of have a hands-on guided opportunity to go through that process and kind of get rid of some of the mystery around it, so that, if you have chickens of your own and it's time to do that, then you can feel confident that you can do that.
No, oh, that's great. And Wendy's from the long-standing Swampy Acre family.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
that's
so,
where.
So they know animals.
And many thanks to Swampy Acres and Joan and Jim for letting us use their space there. The other workshop that we have going on is on Sunday afternoon, and that's what Sarah is hosting.
Yes, I am.
Great.
We're
going to
be doing something called the Chicken and the Egg, because we just love all of our chicken-related puns, and it's going to be a cooking class. And we're calling it Chicken and the Egg, Creative Canning and Cooking. And the kitchen is yet to be determined, but if you register for that, it's going to be about a 3-hour class, and you're going to learn to cut up, process in terms of not process in exactly the same way that Darren's going to be doing the day before, but canning and different ways to cook, as well as eggs. So looking at pickling eggs and the best way to boil an egg and all that kind of stuff.
Definitely sounds like part two to Wendy's class.
Yeah, exactly.
It is, actually.
Intentionally.
So let's paint a picture here. So Saturday morning, April 5th, the Juno Chicken Summit starts at the UAS Lecture Hall. Everybody's there. Mm-hmm. And then it sounds like there's different classes you could sign up. Is that correct? Or is it just kind of flow?
It's kind of flow. We have until noon on Saturday morning. We'll be doing those lectures and panels and such. People will be having lunch on their own on Saturday. And then we're going to meet up at Swampy Acres at 1 and have that butchering demonstration. Those folks who are going to stay and do the processing on their own and register to do that can get scheduled to do that in different sessions throughout the afternoon. But that's also the same time that we began our tour to coop. And so we have maps and we have different locations that folks are going to come in. And in fact, if you want to share your own coop and you live in the valley, we're actually looking for a couple more representative coops there. I want to give at this point a shout out to a great volunteer, Eric Shaw, who's been helping coordinate, and he's the coop tour master this year. And so we'd really appreciate getting some calls if somebody wants to show off their coop. And it doesn't have to be the most awesome thing in the world. We're looking just to share how it's working for folks and how it's not working, and just have some good conversation. And you just have to be ready to have a few dozens of people coming through your yard. We do techniques techniques to try and, you know, make sure we're not transmitting diseases by having foot washes and stuff like that. In fact, once again, our state veterinarian, Bob Gerlach, is coming down and gracing us with his presence, and he's going to be participating on the expert panel and answer questions about potential diseases and stuff like that. But mostly, you know, what we have is a whole host of folks going to share about coops. If you want to learn how to build a coop, how to manage eggs, manage birds, different types of birds, of chicken breeds, and some of their characteristics, and a lot of good sharing is going to go on both in those lectures on Saturday and on the tours. So we do have a second set of tours going on Sunday afternoon, so that's going to be a whole other set. It's going to be Douglas and downtown based. On Sunday morning, we're going to have an informal kind of chicken chat session going on from 10 to noon at the back room at the Silver Bow. So if people just want to talk chicken there, come on over. And another longtime volunteer of ours, Judy Klein, is going to be, and hopefully her husband Ron, who have been raising chickens for years, will be kind of hosting that event and just kind of, you know, being there. And hopefully other chicken folks will show up and have an informal just discussion about chickens. It's a hot topic.
If you're just joining us, that's Darren Snyder talking about the Juno Chicken Summit. It's happening this weekend. And if you want to find out more information, the best way to do that is call 796-6221. Is that correct?
That is a great way. We have an online registration that's it's still warming up for us. It's not quite hot, so we've got that going on. But so it's an awesome weekend coming up. We would love to also share with you, we're going to be kicking off the weekend actually on Friday night with our first ever shindig.
Our big shindig, yeah. So Friday night at the Rockwell Ballroom, 6 o'clock, and then at 7 o'clock, Susu and the Prophets are going to play.
Cool.
And, yeah, come and dance.
Sounds great. So is there a fee for any of this?
Yes, there is, it's all very rather nominal. So all of them are pretty much $15 at the door, or $12 if you register ahead of time. So that's for the dance. It's also for the Saturday activities, just $12 advanced.
You sign in advance, you get all this for $12.
If you're going to purchase and butcher your own bird, that's $20, because it does cost a pretty good amount of money to raise a bird. These are birds that were raised in Juneau by Wendy.
Right.
Yeah.
And how many chicken farmers are in Juneau?
People with their own backyard coops. It's unknown. I mean, people don't have to register them, so there's no real accurate number. I would suspect in the hundreds.
Okay. So and on one last question. So Neighborhood Chickens has the whole Neighborhood Chicken, movement.
Yeah, uh-huh,
the whole Neighborhood Chicken movement across the nation has just exploded in the last 5 years. Do you want to talk about some of the pros of having a little livestock unit in your backyard?
There's so many different motivations. Do you want to kick into it a little bit?
Well, one of them that's really great has to do with the family. Mm-hmm. It's they're depending on exactly why you've got chickens, but they're great for kids. They're great mm-hmm. pets. And it's a really, really interesting way to introduce them to where their food comes from. And so I think that's one of the reasons why people have really, it's taken flight, is because,
now I know who wrote these posters,
is because there are so many reasons, and all of them seem to be really, really fun.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the reasons.
Yeah, it's not cheap, and you will end up spending money on various things, but the feed being the primary expense. But it's also not cheap to purchase eggs that are humanely produced either. And you're right there, just like Sarah said, that you know how your birds are treated, and if they're happy birds, you're happy about your food. So it goes a long way like that. There's also a whole food security element to the more locally available foods there are, the less we have to rely on transportation to get food here and people to produce it elsewhere in the world. So there's just that kind of a little chink in the increase in food security, local food security.
Right. Well, that sounds great. So Let me see if I could wrap this up succinctly and I have it right. So Friday night there is a big party at the Rockwell Ballroom. It opens at 6, 7 o'clock. Susu and the Prophets play. That is $12 in advance.
$15 and $15 at the door, correct?
Right. And
$30 for families. We'll
oh,
that.
Great. Yeah. And then 796-6221 is the best way
correct.
To get signed up. And then Saturday and Sunday is the Juno Chicken Summit. And it starts at the UAS lecture hall. And then we have a lot of different things going on. And if anybody has any questions, they could give you guys a shout at 796-6221.
Yes, that's
okay.
Wonderful.
Any one last pun, Sarah?
Oh.
You've got to share any kind of, you know, come
it
talk
never happens
turkey
when
about
I'm...
chickens. Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
it's got to come naturally.
Too much pressure.
We've only scratched the surface on it, though.
Oh,
that's
foul, Darren.
I know.
Okay, guys. All right. So that's the Chicken Summit. Thanks so much for coming in. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to bring on our next guest. Be right back. Welcome back to Juno Afternoon. It's 3:47 p.m. on Monday, March 31st. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show, and yes, he picked that song. I am Joan Pardis, your Monday host, and I'm here with Elise Galvin. She is part of the Great Alaskan Schools, which is a statewide organization about...
We are all about funding for public schools,
right.
And it is statewide. Our group right now has grown, well, at least out of Anchorage. We started with about 20 of us, and now we're at 1,200 in 7 weeks and growing.
That's great. So Great Alaskan Schools is a statewide mm-hmm. coalition.
Absolutely.
It's
every
nonpartisan.
District.
And mm-hmm. Elise is based in Anchorage. At their recent rally, which was last week, 850 people showed up. Okay, Juno, we had a rally about 4 weeks ago. 200 people showed up.
Awesome. So we're looking to double that this Friday.
Okay, tell us what's going on Friday.
Okay, so this Friday, we're trying to draw attention to the idea that the amount of money that we're looking for our ask, which is $400 this year and then $125 for the next 2 years after that. so that we can have the continuity that we need to
You're
stop
talking about
the
base student allocation.
We're talking about the base student allocation.
Which has not been raised in how many years?
Thank goodness you asked. 3 years.
Okay.
So there's been some funding that's been added, and we are so grateful to our legislators for doing that in different pockets like transportation and other areas.
But nothing really sustainable that educators could actually count on a yearly basis.
That's
that
right.
True?
And so the board, the school boards in various districts are saying, hey, we can't keep staff based on one-year funding, one-time funding. So the idea is that we get out there as grassroots organizations and we raise our arms up and we say, hey, we're asking for one-half of 1% of what we have in the bank and our constitutional reserves that's really set aside money for lean times, which we are expecting over the next few years. But we're asking for one-half of 1% of that pie. And so we're calling it Pi Day this Friday. So come on down to the Capitol steps at noon. Please come with your friends and your brothers and your cousins and everybody else. Bring a pie, bake a pie, buy a pie if you'd like. The plan is to shout it out there for our BSA getting raised and then to share pie with our legislators and remind them that what we're asking for is really a representation of crumbs from a pie, one half of 1% of the reserves that we have. So
sounds
great.
Should
be fun. We're going to have music and kids speakers and just anybody who wants to come in and give a voice in there. We need it. Bring a sign. And hopefully it'll be sunny like it is today. Wow.
Yeah, beautiful. That would be wonderful, but it doesn't matter. So, okay, so that's Friday at noon at the Capitol steps. Besides coming to a rally, which is important to let the legislators know that we really do care, what can people do? If you're concerned about education, the fact that Alaska is one of the richest states in the union, and we have, as far as our graduation rate and our test scores, we're on the bottom of the heap.
Yeah, well, here's the good news.
So what
we want to share with you that is actually our graduation rate is growing. We're no longer at the bottom of the heap. We started in 1995 at around 60%, and statewide we're now in the 70s, 72 or so. In Anchorage we're at 79, and Juneau's pretty close. So we're really climbing. The message is that we want to get to our legislators is that things are actually going well, and they're certainly not going to keep on this trend line of our graduation rates rising if we continue to flat fund. So that's where we're at. And how to get that message across, there's any number of ways. We certainly need more and more letters to the editor expressing how people feel about what they're seeing in their classrooms and what they expect to see next year. I know in Juneau, I was just talking with a school board member, they plan to see, they have already voted that they're going to have to increase their class size by 3 students per class. So let's look at a typical fifth grade right now is already at 29 students in Juneau. And so that it's going to rise to about 32, and we know that really makes a difference in education. So one thing you could do is talk about what you see, and that could either be in an op-ed piece to the Juneau paper. We could definitely use more phone calls to your particular legislator, but also really to any of them, especially in House Finance, who are making those decisions right now. In fact, we expect more announcements today. Just last week, we heard they did raise the funding to education by $75 million, and that's the great news. But the really not so good news is that funding isn't in the pocket of BSA. So now we're concerned and we're down here because we're watching that bill carefully to make sure that it goes into the pocket of BSA. So write to your legislators, pick up the phone and call. We hope to have some super fun surprises this Friday where we'll actually get a good sense to call together. It's really fun to do that. We did that in Anchorage, and boy, that had great results. I heard lots of people saying, boy, it's a lot of fun to make calls together. So that might be something we do. We'll just slip in as many surprises as we can this Friday at noon.
Okay. And back to what you're saying, so that there was an increase to education, but it's not in the pocket of BSA. Yeah. So I'm hearing that it is another one-time investment in education, but not something. Can you explain that?
You know, honestly, I probably shouldn't because it hasn't been defined yet.
Okay.
What they've done is just said, let's set aside this amount of money for education, and they haven't articulated where they want to put that money, and so we're watching it super carefully. We expect an announcement in any minute now, so watch the paper for tomorrow and keep your eye on what to ask your legislator. But yeah, so they haven't said that for sure, but that is the ask. And the bigger ask, so that we don't go over this every year, is to say, hey, why don't we have scheduled increases for the next 2 years after that, so that we have the sense of continuity that we know school boards need as they make decisions with their staffing. And we're asking for 400 raise this year to kind of make us whole again, and then 125 for the next 2 years, so which is more or less representative of what we expect for inflation to be. So we're calling it scheduled increases of 125 and then 125. It's important to get that message in, too, because we really want to be more efficient in how we educate our children.
Sounds great. So if people want to find out more about Great Alaska Schools, what can they do?
Okay. The easiest thing to do is to go online and go to the greatalaskaschools.org website. I believe Mary Hakala was here sharing that. It started here in Juneau, and now, like I say, it's statewide. Almost every district has at least a few parents in it. So that's what you want to look at, is the greatalaskaschools.org. That's the best way. And then there are links within that. For the biggest one is Juneau, so you'll find out things about that. And it'll also give you talking points and other things that have happened in the past and kind of what we are looking for the future for actions.
Right. And if you do want to talk to your legislator, or if you do want to talk to one of the House Finance Committee members, how can people find out about that?
Okay. If you go online again, it will give you a link to who yours is. And it will also give you the talking points of what you might say. So it will have a list of who the phone numbers and the email addresses. And I've heard that they really like to get a personal email. So give your story from your heart, be respectful, and make that ask, that consistent ask of raise the BSA and do it for 2 extra years after that.
That sounds great, because I'm a firm believer that our legislators all have the best interest of Alaska in heart.
I agree.
And I think as Americans, it's our right and it's our privilege and it's also our duty to share our thoughts, not only at the dinner table, not only at the PTA meeting, not only at the school playground, but with the people who are actually making the laws, that you could actually petition the people who are actually have their fingers on the purse strings.
What we're finding in the hallways at the Capitol is that people are saying phrases like, wow, it's so refreshing to see a person who's not, you know, dressed in a big fancy suit. They just really like to hear from people. So I would say absolutely you're right. Parents, grandparents, any community member who knows how important education is to our economy, go ahead and give them that pitch. They need to hear it. They need to hear from their constituents.
That sounds great. So if you're just joining us, it's Elise Galvin. She's with Great Alaska Schools. There's a big rally on the Capitol steps this Friday, Elise, at noon. Elise, thank you so much for coming. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note. Two herons, one dark, the other white, feed at the edge of a wooded pond in the south. The dark bird has a blue-gray body and red-violet neck. The other is pure white. Yet both birds are little blue herons. What's going on here? Why the color change? Well, the white bird is a juvenile. These young herons benefit from foraging with flocks of snowy egrets, which stir up prey. The white immatures mix readily with the white egrets, and by this mimicry, gain a better chance of getting a meal. The dark birds are adult herons, toward which snowy egrets are aggressive. Dark herons in general tend to be solitary, and quite aggressive even to each other. By arraying the immature little blue heron in white, nature helps the young bird survive the vulnerable early years of its life. You can find find photographs of little blue herons in both light and dark plumage on our website, birdnote.org. Science reviewers for BirdNote include Dennis Paulson, Gordon Oriens, Ivy Ulsh, and Bob Sundstrom. Our producer is John Kessler, and our executive producer is Chris Peterson. The Cornell Lab of Ornithology provides the bird sound. Today's show brought to you by the Lufkin Family Foundation. For BirdNote, I'm Michael Stein.
Thank you for joining Juno Afternoon today, Monday, March 31st. Tomorrow is April 1. Scott Burden will be here to talk about many things tomorrow. We'll get the details about Sexual Assault Awareness Month, get a preview of Wednesday's concert by Dave McGraw and Mandy Farr. John Neary will be here to highlight this week's Wildlife Wednesday presentation, and all the regulars of Juno Afternoon. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis. And the weather, tonight partly cloudy, becoming mostly cloudy late, lows 25 to 32. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, highs around 42, light winds becoming southwest 10 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, slight chance of rain, then slight chance of snow late, lows around 32. And Wednesday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain with a slight chance of snow. Wednesday night, rain and snow. And then Thursday through Friday is mostly cloudy and looks like maybe some rain this weekend. Thanks for listening. We'll be here tomorrow at 3 p.m.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
Hey, Scott Burden just came into the studio. Hey, I hear the drive started today. How's it going?
It did start, Joan. It's going really well, and I want to thank everyone who's already called in or gone online to make a sustainable membership contribution here at KTOO. You can do that by going to 586-3636, or you can go online. And I also want to thank you, Joan. That's one of the ways that you support public radio here in Juno, is by spending time with us every week to host a Juno Afternoon.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and you do a great job, very professional. And to be like Joan, that's what you do, right? You support us with time. If you want to support us with your contribution, please go to 586-3636, and here's the news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. With just hours to go before the deadline to sign up for individual health insurance under the Affordable Care Act, people are flocking to websites, call centers, and in-person enrollment events. It's in